Join us as we cover many an insane movie and numerous cult TV phenomenons. Are you ready to get jacked up? Are you with us? Then listen on. Fellow guests, introduce yourself. B-Watch Rewatch is here.
Katie, you go first. You take over.
I was already going to go first. I didn't even ask. I just pushed you right out of the way.
Push him out.
I'm Cadence, and I am the co-host of B-Watch Rewatch, a show that I have made with my brother, and he is here.
And that's me, Colin. And actually, you're not just the co-host. You are the brainchild behind it. It was all your... You facilitated that whole thing.
Thank you. I was being humble, but yeah.
It's all her. It's all kids.
Lots of humbleness on the show. And then I got loyal partner in crime, Jonathan Mark.
What's up, everybody?
Are you ready to get freaky or are you ready to get freaked out by
the
craziness we're about to talk about? So we just couldn't help ourselves. We were just like looking at stuff we could talk about, and I had a list in advance, and we're just like, let's just record this episode in advance. Let's just talk about some weird cult filmmakers. They could be making B movies. They can just be just someone who you you have a lack of an explanation for. It's like, this is
in a realm of their own.
Mm-hmm. They could even have made literally just nothing for like decades, and yet they have some kind of fandom about them. Totally. So, I was just really thinking about even just Ryan Trenchard Smith and how this guy just was like invented this, you know, just jumped on the Ozploitation, which is like basically Australian exploitation movie versions, and just went about just appearing on just bizarre movies of all kinds that were, everyone was just like, wait, you made that for that X amount of money? So he kind of just keeps becoming revered. Like, everyone's been introduced to him at some point because he's just like done so many movies and for the big and small screen on different budgets. You want to talk
Australian director, you said?
Yeah. And he's even more wacky because like Tarantino like idolizes him. He's like, he's the best filmmaker ever. And he's done all kinds of movies, horror films, slasher films, spy movies. This is like, you never know what you're getting from Brian Trenchard Smith. He's done virtually every kind of genre because he is always on time and at it.
It keeps you on your toes. You just never know what you're gonna get. I love it.
Oh, totally. And he's done some really good movies. He's done even just some dorky movies. I guess you could say he kind of rose to fame because he did this one movie with ex-James Bond actor George Lazenby, and it was called The Man from Hong Kong. And so it was like, there you go. You got part spy movie, part Hong Kong tribute. And,
did he do Leprechaun?
Yes, he did like part 3 and 4.
Part 3 and 4 of Leprechaun, yes.
There you go. So
he really like,
that's all I need to hear.
He did some Skinamax crap, and then he also did like BMX Bandits, which is like Nicole Kidman's first movie ever.
Oh, right on.
And he did a Fast and Furious like ripoff, Drive Hard.
Oh, there you go. yes he did. Yeah, it's like Die Hard / Fast
Drive
and Furious,
real
but
hard
in a car the whole time. Yeah. And it seems friends of their show, Steven Izzy on Everything I Learned from Movies, had the chance to interview him, and he's just he makes no quibbles about what he makes. He's just like, yeah, I pretty much don't take anything I do seriously. So
I mean, he's got a list of names under his belt that are pretty amazing. Lots of movies from since the 70s till now, man. Guy's been busy.
So cool how he's has kind of a second emergence. So I'm going to let John talk about Mark L. Lester.
Oh, yeah.
The director and producer.
But ended up doing Commando with Schwarzenegger and later on Shodown no Tokyo with Dolph Lundgren and Brandon Lee, which I've always enjoyed that.
He did like
the 90s film.
He was like on the grindhouse scene for a while, and he was just doing all kinds of just weird 80s, 70s and 80s movies. I mean, he pretty much was hired to do Firestarter just because he works so dirt cheap, you know?
That's true.
You must adapt a Stephen King terror film, but it's not really scary, but it's pretty action-packed and lots of explosions.
That's true.
Throwing an explosion when in doubt.
He did a Crooked Cop movie with Scott Glenn and Lou Diamond Phillips that premiered on HBO. It was a lot of fun.
Lou Diamond Phillips?
Yes.
Haven't heard that name in a while.
I hear that every day in this house.
What are you talking about, dude? He's on TV every day. Whether it's
pretty much.
He was on the Netflix show Longmire, and yeah, he's always got like some guest spot.
Something's going on. Maybe I should say I haven't seen his face in a while.
It's kind of hard to avoid. He's at a convention all the time. But yeah,
that's what it seems like.
All fair.
Cadence. What? Mark Lester, the director that was just brought up. Uh-huh. He directed Sand Sharks, one of our faves of
Wait,
all time.
He was involved in that?
Yes, Sand that. Sharks.
Oh my
I know
God,
he did
yes.
like a Tyrannosaurus Rex kind of movie. And for the longest time, he was doing just weird
movies. It's under his list, but when I go to
maybe
it,
maybe he's producer.
Yeah, okay. He might be producer. Sorry.
Oh, he did. So. He formed a company called American International Pictures or some shit. I think it was a different one, not to be confused with the other drive-in one. And so yeah, after that, yeah, after his star dried up, he basically just started producing all these movies we were talking about just for HBO, and like he just had some weird slasher film or some weird stupid action movie, and he would just half the time you would just be like, well, this is something weird, but okay,
yeah,
fun guy. And he pretty much you can kind of tell is like he didn't care how cheap he was making his movies. He was just like, okay, 10K, that's it. Sticking with it. Anyone misbehaves, I'm going to have something to say about it, you're on. But I don't want to say cynical. I think he just kind of just got to where he's like, I just don't care anymore. I'm just going to keep making what I want to make. Just
sort of like the Nicolas Cage of directors.
If you want to put it that way, kind of a mainstream B-movie guy, and just basically I think he was just a little bitter because like his producing partner was his ex-wife, and so he just had to form his own production company. And I think after a while he just got tired of using some of the same B-listers like Erica Oleniak and Eric Roberts and all those guys.
Oh, Eric Roberts, love
yeah
him.
He did another crazy movie with him called Hitman's Run, and so basically yeah, Eric Roberts is a former hitman forced out of retirement.
Forced out of retirement
with an annoying kid to babysit. Yeah.
It's always forced out of retirement. You always
like
are
no
the guy
one
that
else could possibly
no one else
job.
Can do the role. It's always one guy who just retired every time. That always makes for the best story,
like Mitch in Baywatch. Mm-hmm. How he was like been retired from the CIA for 20 years, but he was the
right?
only guy who could stop the terrorists.
The only person, yeah,
the mm-hmm. only guy.
No,
I guess
so. Possibly
so, what's your take on John Carpenter? Because it's like it seems like he was hated, now he's revered, and now it pretty much just depends on what movie you've seen him in. Like I've seen some people, like I had one coworker who basically, had he not made Halloween and Big Trouble in Little China, he really wouldn't have cared for anything else Carpenter had made. And I've seen other people just vice versa. It's like they've gone into all kinds of stuff that he's done, and like Swear by Prince of Darkness and all this other stuff. It's like, wow, okay.
Yeah, yeah, I think in our house, he's like a god, essentially, because I'm not super into horror movies, but my partner and my kids are. And so they've basically made it through that entire filmography, and they love it. They
you also left me out. I love the horror movies, and every time I'm at your house, I watch them with your kids and your
That's
husband.
That's true. That's and how I've you guys all of them. Spend time together. That's your quality time. And then I'm like, I'll just go in the other room and I get some quiet time. But yeah, he's revered, to say the least.
Yeah, I guess. I dig his movies. I'm neutral.
I guess in our house, he's revered. 4 out of 5. Recommend him. Give him 2 thumbs up.
Oh, good. So, what about Jack Shoulder? Yeah, you probably know him for By Dawn's Early Light, The Hidden, Wishmaster 2.
Wishmaster.
Nightmare on Elm Street 2. So, yeah, he's kind of another guy. He just was going around on the B-movie circuit kind of for a while, and then he just kind of disappeared for a while. In fact, you were talking about Lou Diamond Phillips. He did that movie Renegades with him and Kiefer Sutherland.
Yep.
Oh, my God, Renegades.
So yeah, he's worked on all kinds of genres. Yes,
love Jack Shoulder.
Yeah, and it seems like he just kind of just disappeared after a while. Like, he could have been a bigger name, and it's just like his movies just he basically said for a while he was just working for New Line Cinema, and he just kind of became their go-to horror guy, even when they weren't making a horror movie.
Feels like he got kind of pigeonholed.
Yeah. You could definitely consider him along maybe Anthony Hickox, who's another cult guy who Warlock 2, which Hellraiser 3.
I love the Hellraiser movies. Oh, I've never seen Hellraiser 3, though.
Whoa?
Okay. I know. Still to this day.
We gotta fix that. Anyway. it's like Russell McAhey, you know, Highlander, Ricochet, is like, it seemed like they just would keep popping out and just doing some weird entry for who knows what. And Kevin Tinney's another one who I've kind of noticed. He has started the whole Witchboard saga and then kind of just vanished after a while. What gets me is how, like, this was just back then when just no one was even looking twice. Like, it's not like they had something like on IMDb where they could tell if your movie had even played in a theater or not. Everyone's just like,
right.
That's all they had. So,
right.
They took advantage of your ignorance. Man, that was bad. Chuck Russell's kind of on that same thing. Yeah, if you didn't do a horror entry, then you just kind of did just whatever is like, or you did a remake of a popular 50s movie like The Blob and
right, recycle.
Well, one of my favorite director that was kind of horror, like creature film, Claudio Fragesso, is am I saying that right, is his last name, the Italian director.
He did Troll 2,
but he did so many other awful bad, like, they're all like creature kind of horror movies, and they're all kind of, I would say, creature themed, which is the best.
He can never speak English, so basically he would just
the whole story behind Troll 2 just is in itself so amazing. But yeah, he actually has a lot of other ones that you should definitely check out.
Did they come after that, Colin, or was like, what's the order, like, where does Troll 2 come in the series? Or
Troll 2's actually, he made a couple in the 80s, and then Troll 2 he made in 1990, and he made quite a bit after in the 90s. And
I kind of remember, did Charles Band of Full Moon, we've already kind of dedicated so much to him. I mean, love the dude. I love him even more than Roger Corman, because basically Charles Band just he's just like, you're gonna make something spooky and then you're just gonna add as much stupid dialogue to it as you want, you know.
Right. Ginger Dead Man, still one of my faves of all time.
I'm gonna keep making these stupid movies until you fuckers stop buying them. It was like Curiosity Kills the Cat, and that's just basically what you got with Charles Band.
And there's absolutely always, like, there's always a market for it, and it's like you can pump them out so quickly, and there's always going to be someone who wants to watch them.
Totally. And I love how he never acts like he's bigger than the average bear. He knows exactly what he's doing. I mean, and you know he can take a joke, because, I mean, come on. He's like, hey, money in my pocket. And at the same time, you want to make fun of this stupid shit we made? Go for it. So he's given Riff Trax and Elvira plenty of freedom to make fun of any of his movies. And
he made this movie that we watched the other day that was like a ripoff of Gremlins called Ghoulies, and it was bizarre, but it definitely was one of my favorites. I love Cadence. Did we watch that together? Were you here?
We watched part of it, but we didn't finish it.
He would get really creative with the knockoffs, as well as just hire comic book writers. And so it's like, it always came down to, is like, if anything, directors left or writers did rewrites, but he never did any, you know, like some of these other low budget guys did, especially like some of Corman's later productions, where it's like, you know, actors bitch slapped each other or treated each other unprofessionally, or And never anything hectic where it's just like so-and-so didn't get paid on time. It's like, yeah, no, he pretty much stepped in. And reading even the It Came From the Video Isles book, it's been so great to even read other people who used to work there. And we've had C. Courtney Joyner, who worked on the Transfers movie, on the show. And you know him as the zombie that burst through the glass in Dawn of the Dead.
Oh, yes.
And so, yeah, it's like, it was pretty much run like a family business. I mean, you have to, if your dad is a producer who had inspired you and your brother's a composer for reality shows and music. And
so Charles Band do Troll, that Troll 2 was apparently carrying the name from?
Yeah, Empire Pictures, I think, produced it. And so I never understood if he hired him or if it was already a done deal and he just distributed it later. But yeah, it's like he had a bunch of productions that, due to tax cuts, that would film up in Rome. And so this is like, yeah, it's a disaster if you got a guy who just can't speak any English.
Yeah, that's so funny. Okay, yeah.
Totally. And that's kind of a good build on. He hired a bunch of those guys who were making a bunch of Skinamax stuff. And it's just like, yeah, just have weird nudity, but have it have a bunch of sci-fi stuff. So like Emmanuel, but even weirder. Just like, have aliens having sex.
Nudity and sci-fi, that's all you need.
Yeah. Ted V. Michaels is another guy who I hear come up. It is like Astro Zombies and other shit. It is like Girl in Gold Boots, which was a Mystery Science Theater movie. He basically is another guy who is like, has not done anything that you can watch with a straight face, and he just has no shame about it. He has a weird Fu Manchu looking mustache and everything.
Yeah, it's amazing. His mustache is incredible.
I'm surprised the dude's still alive. He and Burl I. Gordon have been making all kinds of weird B pictures for years on end.
Yeah, for a long time.
It's like Burl I. Gordon is like 90 years old or some shit, and yeah, Michaels, he's got to be at least 70 or 80. He's been around for a while.
Yeah, he, his first movies were in the 50s. Yeah, he's been around.
Mm-hmm. And then there's I can't go an episode without talking about him. Kurt Voss, who's another guy who's just kind of been making a bunch of independent movie dramas. Let me look at what he was best known for.
Kurt Voss.
He's the name I would just see just come up. Like, I'm like, oh, so he worked on this.
I don't know if I've seen many Kurt Voss movies.
Let me see.
The Heist with Luke Perry. And
yeah.
That
was a fun movie.
I know. I'm again. All right. Yeah, I don't know if I've seen any of these, actually. Oh, there's another Ice-T movie. Below? Yeah, I think that was his. No, Stutter was his latest movie.
No, I don't think that's the one.
Cadence, what's the director of, like, on the sci-fi theme, but not going like horror, but going more sci-fi, our favorite director of, like, well, Birdemic was kind of horror, I guess you could say. The second one was Shock and Terror. But what's his name?
Oh, Eugene? James Nguyen.
James Nguyen. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
His movies. Want to see every movie he ever makes. I think Cadence and I are the only ones that maybe have seen.
Well, we haven't seen Birdemic. There's two sequels to Birdemic.
No, there's not. There's only one, yes, I thought.
There's two now. There's two now.
But he's kind of riding on that, like, cult classic, you know.
But yeah, that's so, the thing. I feel like there's a whole, like, there are some B-movie directors who maybe they set out intentionally to make a really good movie. I feel like James Nguyen is one of those.
Oh,
like,
he thought he was.
No, that's a good point. So basically,
he embraced it. He was like, okay, well, this did not turn out how I thought it was going to, but like, we're all having fun. Let's just go with it. And I kind of love that attitude. Like, okay, well, it wasn't what I thought. Even Tommy Wiseau, bless his little heart. Like,
that's a good segue. Kurt Voss is just one of many independent guys who basically just makes Tarantino type crime dramas and everything. And yeah, Yin legit just took himself so seriously. He's like, I'm going to make. I'll remake Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds without remaking it. This is like, and yeah, I remember that interview where he's like, I think Tommy Wiseau is a crappy filmmaker, yada yada. And it's just like, well, have you seen your movies lately? You have GIF files.
We watched Julian Jack, one of his, like, his,
that was his, one right of his first one. Birdemic.
Yeah.
We love it so much. Them dating in a simulation and like, the whole thing's wild. Like, conceptually, he was really, like, you know, aiming high. It was
before he sold out and decided to just be an asylum right. equivalent. Whereas, like, I'm going to make intentionally bad bird movies now. But yeah, Julian Jack is like the movie playing on the screen. So it's like,
yes, in the background.
To and be then he, is like, credited everywhere for Replica, his very, very first movie, Replica, about clones.
No, Julie and wrong. Jack is his first movie. Replica was so the second Replica movie. So then Replica
might be the second one. And it's, yeah, yeah, remember they like clone people.
Can you even find it?
A winery involved.
Oh, wow.
But that's what we love about those movies. We love when they're not self-aware, you know? That's the beauty right. of it. That's our favorite kind, is when they're just really ambitious, trying to make this, like, social commentary. Like, Troll 2 was the same thing, you know? Like, yeah. I guess be vegetarian, but eat humans. It didn't make a ton of sense. But I just, and The Room, I mean, I just, there's so much more magic to it when it's just trying to set some.
Yeah, I think that's why we've avoided the sequels to Birdemic, because we keep seeing the trailers and being like, but now he's in on the joke. And so it feels like a little.
Yeah, like he's self-aware less, because even the yeah. actress was saying that, like, because she came, she like kind of ragged on it and how did this get made? And then she like went back, you know, to be in Birdemic too, I think, right?
Right,
I think
right. So. They both so, do. Yeah. yeah.
Fraud. So if anything, Yin is basically the next Ed Wood.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's the perfect, like, Ed Wood is similar in the way that I feel like it's this naivete where they almost feel like little kids, like, making this movie of their dreams with a home video camera, if that makes sense. There's just this sort of, like, innocent bliss to it. And yeah. I have a soft spot in my heart for them.
Innocent, oh, totally. Ambitious. Yeah, for sure.
Right, totally.
Because, like, there's all these other guys who make goofy and yet or serious action films, like David A. Pryor, Damien Lee, Tony Giglio, and Scott Wiper, and to name a few, Keanu Waxman, and Mike Mendez is definitely trying to be the next Sam Raimi. Is like, they'll do just balls out, just violent action or horror movies, and people like them because basically they just, you know what you're in for. And with Yin, I think he just pretty much is like, well, I have an ego, but I can't let it go. So I'm just going to just pretty much just conjure up whatever is on my mind right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wonder, yeah. like, what we mentioned him earlier, but I'm spacing on his name, who did Ginger Dead Man and all those, like, really silly, bizarre ones, like Dollmaster.
I forget Charles his name.
Band,
but yeah.
Charles Band.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder, yeah. did he just hit the ground running with bonkers movies, or did these directors actually try and then they
like
just kind of
start out with something
niche?
Serious?
Yeah, yeah, like, because yeah, I'm curious saying. How many of these directors of these, like, on the same level as Charles Band, like, I wonder how many of them started out kind of with that same ambition of, like, I'm going to make a real horror movie, and then you right. kind of find this niche that people like, and then you just kind of are like, all right, well,
you just, yeah, get comfortable there.
Yeah, I can make a lot of these. I wonder how many of those directors, like, you know.
I think a lot of them, especially Courtney, would just kind of joke about it. He's just like, oh, heavens, you know me from that. But yeah, I think they also, that they were all glad to have be given a lot of creative freedom, and at the same time, they knew they were making silly movies as a whole. So it's like, yeah, some of them are way more goofier and some of them are way more just kind of serious, but, you know, yeah. just kind of a low budget oddity. So I think it really just kind of, at the end of the day, it really just comes down to what's in the can. And I mean, yeah. I think it helped that around that time you had people like, again, Joe Bob's Monster Vision, other people who were just like, they would eat up all that kind of stuff. So it's like, I think they were pretty much just like, well, at this point, if it makes it onto USA Up All Night, that's an accomplishment.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? If it has to be a weird puppet master versus whatever, you know, that's what we're making. And
or any of those sci-fi movies on Sci-Fi Channel, it's like those directors are in their sweet spot.
Well, we've talked about this on our podcast, actually. Like, we were loving sci-fi because back in the day, sci-fi didn't make, like, Sharknado kind of changed the game for the sci-fi thing, because Sharknado was so ridiculous, and now they make, like, octopus versus flying pterodactyl.
Yeah, now they're so self-aware, not fun anymore.
Before that, they were, like, more serious. Like, they were trying to make, like, real sci-fi movies, you know?
Well, that's a good point. So, yeah, Philip J. Roth, through his UFO production company, was producing a lot of those, and after a while, it just kind of got to where, like you say, is like, they would start telling the guys, you got to make deliberately bad movies. But yeah, they I enjoy all those Boa versus Python type movies, but yeah, when it came down to the Asylum taking over sci-fi, that got very annoying. And I get it, some people love Sharknado, but have you seen their other movies lately? They're just unbearable. And
right,
it's like, it would be working maybe as an SNL gag, but that's it. And
right,
yeah, it's kind of being like stretched a little thin at this point.
It's not that much material to stretch out. The gag's not good.
Yeah, I would even get to where I would do my homework is like, oh, if this writer or filmmaker worked on this sci-fi channel movie, then they're not going to be very creative. Like, there was this one guy, I would see his name pop up, I'm like, oh, he does all the Hallmark Lifetime shit, this is gonna be a snooze. But this one guy I like, Tabar Tabox, he did like a bunch of stuff. Like, John might know him from a lot of his Mark Dacascos kung fu movies in the 90s
as well.
Those who don't know Dacascos, he has been in everything, like Cradle of the Grave with Jet Li, John Wick 3 with Keanu Reeves. But yeah, it's like, he was the Iron Chef, you know, chairman. But yeah, it's like, he would star in all kinds of weird movies. And Tabar Tabox, I thought he did pretty good at, I mean, he did Spiders 3D, for God's sakes. He would do all kinds of just wacky action, horror, sci-fi movies. And it's like, when I see any of his stuff appear often, is like, you know, he's going to make some acceptable junk food. As a, because there were some of those other sci-fi movies where you're like, oh, the budget is just too low for this to be fun, or this is this is cheese, but man, it's my kind of cheese.
Yeah, there's a fine line there.
Yeah, it's insane. And it's so wild how you're talking about James Yen, and it's like already Tommy Wiseau is starting to try and make legit movies. I'm like, I need to check these out.
Yeah, didn't Tommy Wiseau, isn't there like a movie that he directed that's coming
friends.
Out?
He and Greg Sestero, yeah, just got together, and it's like they did like this two-part movies of these two friends who come together, and it's like, wow. So I guess that's better than...
We just bought that. We haven't watched it yet, but we just
have you seen it yet?
No, not we yet. Haven't. We're so excited.
Oh, man. So, are you familiar with Fred Olen Ray, Jim Wynorski, and David DeCantel?
No. Tell me all about that.
Okay, so David DeCantel has done pieces of shit like A Talking Cat.
Oh.
Yep.
That sounds great already.
Yes. Yeah, so... So Colin just got in the chat. Have you heard of David Niekuntel, Fred Olen Ray, and Jim Wynorski?
Your mic's off, Colin.
There. I'm asking you to unmute. Stop.
Unmute. All right, I'm just looking. So Fred Olen Ray, you've got Hollywood Chainsaw, Hooker.
Yeah.
Attack of the 60-Foot Centerfold. Oh,
sorry, I'm old and I couldn't figure out how to unmute.
Again, but yeah. So Wynorski and Olen Ray have worked for everybody. They worked for Andrew Stevens.
Island? Oh my God, I gotta watch all of these.
Yeah, they've collaborated. They've done a bunch of stock footage from way better, way bigger budget movies and just done a bunch of shit back to back, starring a bunch of B-listers. They worked with everyone like Corbin Burnson, Treat Williams, and
so
plenty of others.
Evil Tunes like a ripoff of Roger Rabbit?
Yeah, Evil Tunes was basically, yeah, their foot in the door of, well, actually, it was kind of a knockoff of that utter awful movie that had Brad Pitt that was like a Don Bluth animated.
Yes.
Oh, Cool World. That's what it was.
Yeah, Cool World.
Was it?
And, yeah, and this one apparently was just way better because it just embraced the stupidity. And yeah, it's like, you can't just go a single movie of theirs without having just weird, unusual B-movie actors who are like past their prime. And David Carradine, and then...
I love David Carradine.
Fred Olen Ray would even use his dad, John Carradine, quite a lot. Just have a bunch of random footage flying around, and he just would have just an insert saying, this is the dad talking to him as a spirit. And yeah, David DeCantel, it seemed like he just made a lot of just really bad movies that is like, he would contradict himself. One day he would just say, "Is like, I'm just going to get a bunch of hot men who are bare-chested and just make a really bad horror movie with them." It's just like,
sounds just, okay to me, sounds fine.
It's great until you suffer through them. You're like, what's going on? This is like, this is not homoerotic.
It sounds great in theory,
this
but yeah, maybe
for the gals, this is not good at all. This is
okay. So Cadence and I were talking just a minute ago, and I guess we should have done this at the beginning, but like, what what is your guys' idea of like a B movie? Like, I know there's the actual, you know, classic definition of the B movie, but in this realm, like, what do you guys like look for when you watch a B movie, or like, what is your perfect idea of a B movie?
I'll let John go first, but
that's interesting. There's several types I can name, but
because a B film doesn't have to be low budget, like it's commonly exactly. said, you know, like mm-hmm. Alien and Star Wars are B movies, for God's sakes, you know, IMAX is a B movie, but like you're saying, I mean, Indiana Jones, Spielberg has even said, it's my B movie tribute to Treasure of the Sierra Madre. So it's like,
like
you say, I mean, there's a lot of people who, I mean, Guillermo del Toro kind of does a lot of B pictures, but they're considered higher art because, you know, big budget and
right. And that has design. Like, I think a lot to do with it. And even maybe the perception of how the audience sees it is there a studio behind it? Who's directing it? What's the budget?
And yeah, I guess everyone will have a different answer.
Can be like a B material, but it's
somewhere along the 90s. It just seemed like we lost a lot of people, and we got all these film snobs who were like, "A movie must be of this caliber," you know, and win all the awards. Yeah. And yeah. So, I'll see a lot of people who, I politely say, "Okay, you may not like that kind of movie, but don't shit on people who like it." You know, I don't make fun of dickheads who praise Fast and Furious. You know.
Yeah. Right. And like some people wouldn't consider Fast and Furious like a B movie. And like Cadence and I have talked about the concept a lot. Like there are there's like plots that are perfect B movie, but like high budget, like high actors. And then people are like, yeah. Well, that's not a B movie. So it does differ depending on who you talk to. But we were just curious, like, do you like the more campy horror filmy type B movies? Or are you talk like, you know?
I'm definitely, Full Moon is definitely like the best of both worlds, where you got some low budget movies that are pretty mainstream and yet got kind of all Edgar Allan Poe and 50s inspired type stuff. But yeah, it's like Fast and Furious isn't really a B movie. You could probably call it a B movie plot or a cheesy movie, that is for sure. But it's basically no different than, say, a Jerry Bruckheimer or Joel Silver production. So it's just like, yeah, I mean, X-Files kind of has its B movie moments, but it's really not a B movie, but it definitely
kind of has that vibe a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. It's up a genre. Like Star Trek has B movie plots at some point where the Enterprise has been taken over. But yeah, so it's just like,
I mean, we had this discussion a little bit earlier about Face Off. Like that was to Colin and I were like, this is the dumbest, incoherent, cheesy plot. You're switching faces.
Like it's pure got B movie written all over it.
And it did so well.
Well, a 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. Exactly. People loved it. It was so 90s cool.
Like The Godfather could be a B movie if you think about it. So yeah, is like everything kind of, if it's going trying to be like an earlier kind of genre movie, you can definitely call it that. Like M. Night Shyamalan, I would definitely call a B filmmaker in some aspect because he is.
Yeah.
He is making a lot of Hitchcock-inspired kind of Twilight Zone episodes.
Yeah, so, kind of.
Yeah,
he started off strong, but then kind of after The Happening.
Oh no, totally! Like Gina Schwartz, you might know from movies like Jaws 2, and now he does all kinds of soap operas and hospital shows. So there's a lot of people who kind of just fade in and out. Is like, you are what you eat. Like what you were making may be a B movie. Like Rob Zombie is probably the most mainstream B movie filmmaker right now.
Really?
Pretty much.
Oh, did you guys watch the Fred Durst one with Fanatic with John Travolta?
John, unfortunately.
I can't recommend it enough. Like the lead singer of Limp Bizkit making a horror movie with John Travolta. It's the weirdest, most batshit thing I've ever seen in my life, and I love it. Yes. I highly recommend it.
Totally. It's craziness. I've heard John Moore be referred to as B filmmaker. You know him from the Omen remake. He did, his credits include Behind Enemy Lines, Flight of the Phoenix remake, Die Hard 5, and Max Payne.
Max Payne.
And so there you go. He pretty much does every kind of 80s or 90s movie and just focuses on. In fact, there's a good contrast. I definitely consider Sam Peckinpah kind of a B-Western filmmaker. So yeah, he pretty much does what Peckinpah does, which is just full it with just practical blood, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shoot it up. Because yeah, no, like you say, a B-filmmaker kind of comes in many shapes and sizes. Like Jesus Franco, for God's sakes, studied under Orson Welles, and all he did for just the rest of his career was just have lesbians kissing each other and just vampires and utter just
yeah, right. I guess B movie is a mindset, because we've always kind of gone over this at the beginning, because I think we had a clear idea of like what our ideas of some B movies were, and as we've gone on this little journey, especially with our podcast, we've just kind of we've learned that that's evolved. And you're right, it's like there's so many different interpretations of what a B movie is. So I was just curious, yeah, like what you guys are when you watch your B movies, like what B movies do you enjoy? Because I love the sci-fi, like the bad sci-fi thriller ones. I think those are my style B movies always.
Oh, and then all the softcore porn crapola is like, yeah, Zalman King and Gregory Dark. Oh,
well, I was going to bring up. Yeah, I was just going to say, Cadence, like John Derek, because he made some good movies, but he made some really, really bad movies. And his is like softcore porn.
And Bolero is at the top of that list.
Oh, Bolero was so bad. It was so miserable, but he made a lot of really bad movies. But he had like actually a high budget and like could travel around the world, but he just did the, I mean, ugh.
It was, and then you get all these people. Yeah, Derek is an interesting just nutcase, but yeah, then he's like, you get Albert Pion, who, you know, pretty much makes, you know, after Cyborg and Nemesis, that's the rest of his career. He's like, I'm going to make The Sword and the Sorcerer. He's like, I'm going to make some weird medieval sorcery movie with no budget, or I'm going to make a weird post-apocalyptic movie with kickboxing cyborgs, you know? It's just,
right.
It's like, that is his gist of his whole thing. And then just seeing how virtually every movie he's been on has been troubled. Like, he's been either fighting with a racist producer who doesn't like, you know, anyone who's Oriental, or he's just had trouble remembering certain stuff, or he's just always been overridden by a producer because he just takes a while to set anything up. So it's just like, you can't win.
You can't also like pick your battles. Like, if you're not going to make great movies, like just be a good dude and easy to work with, but like don't be a diva, hard to work with, and not make good movies.
Oh, don't they? Look at Roger. Well, and look at Roger Christian. I mean, how do you go from being the art designer and production designer on Life of Brian, you know, for Monty Python, the original Alien and the original Star Wars, and then you help out George Lucas by being an assistant director on Return of the Jedi and Phantom Menace, and then you decide, I'm going to make Battlefield Earth.
Oh, that. Yep.
Battlefield Earth.
He had some decent movies that were either like straight to TV or video, as well as some art house theater kind of movies like Nostradamus. And then, yeah, you make Battlefield Earth. It's like, I'm sure there's a good movie in there somewhere, but it didn't. And just, you were involved with Scientology, and so, yeah.
And they had the budget. That's exactly one of those movies.
It's the John Travolta factor.
Yeah, it's,
and it's so funny how most of the budget went to his catering, so everyone else got paid basically.
His personal chef.
And then it's even funnier how Travolta really, to this day, still loves that script. He remarks as...
Oh, he will swear up and down that was a success.
He said it's the Schindler's List of sci-fi.
Yes.
And he's like, he will tell you to this day, like, it was not a failure. On
right
level was it a failure?
It technically wasn't. It did make its it did make its budget back, but right. It was one of those where it's like, yeah, but something didn't agree about it.
Freaking office politics in space. It's so bizarre.
Yeah, we covered that on our podcast, and at the beginning Cadence told me about that comment he made about Schindler's List in space, and I remember
were cracking
that up. And he that said it with a straight face, just blows my mind.
I know, that was just Battlefield Earth.
Totally. Oh man. So what do you think about William Lustig? He did Maniac, and then he followed up with Relentless, and which became its own direct-to-video B-movie action horror series, and then this vigilante guy goes around killing gangsters, and then he makes Maniac Cop, which, you know, you have Larry Cohen co-writing.
Maniac Cop.
And then, yeah, Vigilante, which is an excuse for Robert Forster and Fred Williamson to take out the trash, and it's like, man. So he's kind of just been popping up and down, just appearing at conventions, appearing on Joe Bob, and it's just like, whatever you think of his movies, is like, he's ready for it. And apparently he worked with James Glickenhaus, who did The Exterminator and McBain, all these other movies, and it's funny how Glickenhaus even just remarked, he's like, yeah, I'll provide funding, but I'm not going to work on his movies because he's dangerous.
Well, there's that one really awful German director that makes all those, like, action,
oh,
crazy, Ubold.
I just knew he was going to come up.
Oh, yes, his movies are painfully problematic and bizarre, and he's like considered one of the worst.
And that's filmmakers. The thing.
And I've definitely seen some, and it's a whole nother genre of bizarre and awful. Because
He is like, you got to have just some kind of coherentness, you know? It's just like,
they don't, when, yeah, it's
when you got
it's like no through line. Lighting.
And so when I see people say they're better than that guy or that guy, I'm like, no, not even close. Oh, I can't even watch those movies all the way.
Yeah, they're awful. And like, I don't know if it's because he's German, but they like maybe try to be funny, but it doesn't land.
Some people have called him on his bullshit. Like he was making In the Name of the King, and they're like, he got offered to write, direct Mr. Brooks with Kevin Costner, who he was offering a role. I'm like, I'm sure Costner was joking with you and you took it out of context
right, like that couldn't have happened. It was
why brilliant. Would he go to bat for the studio when he was already directing movies himself, you know?
Yeah, he's an awful director and his movies are awful.
He really is,
because we all love goofy shit, you know? It doesn't have to be the greatest thing in the world, but when you make just movies where you're just like
they're goofy, but like in a it's like I said, it's kind of this whole other genre of I don't know who would ever enjoy watching those ever.
There's like Jordan Downey, who did Thanksgiving and, you know, Headhunters and Critters, Bounty Hunter. And he's writing those to be silly. Like they're super cheesy, but they are self-aware to a degree. And so it kind of like that for me straddles the line, because like he is self-aware, but in a way that it doesn't feel pompous. And so I still.
Yeah, Michael Dougherty knows what he's making. There's a reason he's getting offered to do Krampus and all this other stuff now. And some guys, they pretty much just shrug their shoulders. They're just going to keep getting off of work regardless of, you know, always being the worst rated movie each year. Like Marcus Nispel would be a good example. You know, you do the Texas Chainsaw remake. And I mean, Tobe Hooper's already kind of a respectable B-movie guy in his own way. But yeah, this is like Marcus Nispel then goes on to do like a Viking movie called, you know, Pathfinder and all these other just chunky movies where you're just like, yeah, you should stick to music videos, buddy.
Like if it's like 5 minutes or under, you're good. But
yeah,
yeah,
totally. I take it you guys are familiar with Stuart Gordon and Brian Usna.
No.
Okay, so they are the duo behind Reanimator, and they then kind of went their own way. Like Stuart Gordon did all these other goofy stuff, and Usna did a bunch of other wild stuff like Faust and the Dentist movies, and they worked with Jack Shoulder on a few other things like Arachnid and everything. So yeah, Usna pretty much started a Spanish horror production company, and Stuart Gordon.
I remember that one.
Yeah, Stuart Gordon went on and did a bunch of other bad stuff like Fortress and even a David Mamet crime movie. So yeah, Robot Jocks for Charles Band. So yeah, they worked for all the other various guys while Wynorski and Olin Ray were just doing weird, you know, over 300 different titty flicks and monster movies for Roger Corman. So yeah,
I feel like B movie directors are really jacks of all trades. Like they really can do anything, and they're so prolific. They're always creating something.
They've always worked with someone who is even better than the gist of their actual movie. Like Jesse V. Johnson and Isaac Florentine are doing all these kickboxing movies with Scott Adkins and all these other martial artists of today. Yep. But everyone forgets that years before they were making just bottom of the barrel, really bad kickboxing movies, you know.
Mm-hmm, totally.
That's true. For shows. So yeah, it's just like they've evolved and they just kept doing what they said. Craig R. Baxley was the stunt coordinator and second unit director on the A-Team and Predator. And so then he goes on to do all these other just wacky movies. And like, I come in peace where Dolph Lundgren must fight an alien, you know. And
Stone Cold,
Brian Bosworth. Yeah, Stone Cold, Brian Bosworth. He's an undercover cop as a biker. So it helps that they get a lot of these same actors, so you already kind of know it's a B movie when you're getting, you know.
Yeah, totally. Just like there's directors, there's actors that are going to always continually pop up in these movies.
What's your take on all the today's weird people, like, you know, Mary Lambert's? It went from being the director of Pet Sematary 1 and 2 to now doing Asylum crap. And now we got people like Richard Kelly, who's kind of an icon since Southland Tales and Donnie Darko. And we got Ryan Murphy of Nip Tuck and the 911 franchise.
Oh, right.
American Horror Story. And so it's like all these guys are just going to keep building up their own fan base and dividing audiences.
It's true. It's like they've got their fan base, and they know that whatever they do is going to be seen by their fan base. There's a guaranteed number of eyeballs that are going to be on whatever project they make. So it's like you don't have to aim higher when you have that consistency.
Have you heard of American Horror Stories? Like, it's people like love it or hate it, and then is it the same director every season? Since every season's different, I didn't realize.
No telling, but Ryan, he's just the producer, but it's his vision. He's the creator, and that's why I brought him up, because he always kind of goes for all these giallo kind of sounding things and just makes all these shows that people either like or really hate, and just like,
yeah, they're a little bit over the top.
Yeah, and he just branched out and made another like spin-off of American Horror Story, like classic American stories that he's doing the same thing, you know.
Oh, I see. Just like expanding the franchise.
Yeah, getting that.
Gotta milk it. So have you heard of Uli Lammel? We're talking Yul Ball. He's apparently up there with like some of the worst German new wave directors. He was like mentored by Andy Warhol, of all people, and he decided, really? I'm an actor, so I'm gonna make all these movies with the likes of Klaus Kinski and Ken Foree. He's done everything, just really boring, really bottom of the barrel. Like,
what was his name?
Uli Lammel, if I'm saying it right. And he has done 1980s The Boogeyman, Revenge of the Stolen Stars, Zombie Nation, and then a bunch of just really bad movies inspired by real life serial killers.
The Zodiac.
Curse of the Zodiac and the BTK killer. And you're just like, DC Sniper, which was probably the worst. I'm like, what are you trying to say? Is this an exploitation movie? What is it? You know?
And right.
Yeah, it really is. It's like it's all of them. And they're very intense.
Yeah.
I've seen several of these, actually. I like
He did this one, which was just basically these people trapped in space. And you're just like, what is even the point of this movie? This is like 2 out of 10 just for the boredom factor. And then, yeah, it's like, at this rate, if you want it, he's dead now. He died in 2017. So, not to say that dying is a good thing, but I mean,
not to promote dying.
He basically must have just hung out with just so many people and just grown a big head. Because, I mean, he worked with Russ Meyer, of all people, who was known for sexploitation. And then works on one of the best German filmmakers of all time, Rainer Werner Fassbinder, on his Love is Cold as Death. And it's just like, you work with this guy and you just somehow get a big head and you just make all this awful shit. And it's like, Jesus.
Ugh. Now I'm on this like German director.
Yeah, whatever you do, don't spend a dime on any of his movies. Oh my God. No. He's bad.
Who's the director that Cadence that did that movie that we love with the cop, Samurai Cop?
Oh yeah, Armin Shirvan. He's on my
list. Armin Shirvan. Yeah, yes.
And he's apparently still alive. Movies. I thought he was dead, and he's like apparently still alive, just making weird movies. Yeah. Or actually,
and that was similar to the Troll 2 situation, because he also English was his second language, and so they kept trying to be like, this script does not make sense. Is it okay if I say it this way? And he's like, nope.
That's what I love. That's another like B movie check mark for me, is just like using what you got. Like the house would change and like the locations, like even
and
with
his wig.
James Nguyen. Yes, his wig and like James Nguyen.
Sons
like,
of a bitch.
It was always like filmed in some random house that didn't fit the situation. And I just love it because it's like scraping by with what you got. But that's how Samurai Cop.
Using what you got.
Yeah. Had to. And we've talked about Sam Raimi before already, but he hired for a while it seemed like he was just producing anyone who he just had to get in the door. And what's your take on Alex Kurtzman, Wishmaster, and just a bunch of just special effects god, K&B, worked with Nicotero and a bunch of the other guys.
Yeah, Robert Kurtzman, yeah.
Recognizing him?
I'm trying to recognize
him. There we go. Oh, so he did he do The Mummy, this last Mummy? Was that him? The one with Tom Cruise?
Maybe he did the effects.
Because it's like Star Trek, Clarice, Fringe, People Like Us.
He's likely doing just the effects supervision. He's not actually directing.
Because I'm like, those are all...
Good,
what about what about The Dead Next Door, which had J.R. Buchwalter? He's kind of a name. making weird movies like Robot Ninja.
Oh,
Polymorph.
Yes,
he's like involved with the original Dawn of the Dead, and just like, she's anything I see him on is like, it's almost always a full moon movie, like Killjoy 2 or Grimlake.
I love it. Those are totally my style. I love it.
Totally. And there's this other guy, I think he was like Tarantino's mentor, and Scott Speedle. That has to be the one. He did From Dusk Till Dawn too.
Yeah, that's them.
Yeah, Scott Speedle. But he, for a while, was doing all kinds of weird movies, like some which are kind of like household names. Let's look it up.
Scott Speedle.
I believe he did Intruder, correctly.
That's the one, yeah. He did that with Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell. there's a good
segment. I love Bruce Campbell.
Everyone does.
Yes, that's true.
Even those who hate him or are jealous of how many babes he gets and zombies he slays, they love him.
His memoir was really good.
Oh, well, which one? It? He's like on book three now.
But oh, yeah. That's true. It was his first one. Called The Chin? Something about his chin?
That's the one. So yeah, Scott Spiegel, he played Fake Shimp in Evil Dead 2, and he's starred in plenty of other Raimi movies. But yeah, for a while, he was also directing and writing stuff like Hostel Part 3.
I know, and I'm thinking of these Hostel series, man.
Oh, totally.
The Intruder, I love.
And it seems like he just will show up for anything. If it's Tarantino or Sam Raimi, he's going to show up. Like, apparently, he helped out with 2001 Maniacs, the remake, so it's like, okay.
They're very, like, B-movie in general, like, the people who make them in any way, they're all, like, super industrious, because you are essentially, like, just working with what you got. You have a limited amount, and so it doesn't matter if you're a set designer, makeup artist, whatever. It's, like,
yeah,
they are so industrious. They are making it Herschel work.
Gordon
they are
Lewis,
pulling it together.
Herschel Gordon-Lewis basically hated every exploitation movie he made, and it's now being reconsidered by some people. Tim Ritter basically inspired people to make their own slashers in the just middle of the desert, you know, on VHS. And
yeah,
Neil Breen is kind of weird, because basically he can calls every movie he makes like Jacob's Ladder meets The Room, and you're like, so he basically gets all this money from like these Catholic church guys, and he's like, and he calls them religious movies, but they don't want to show any of it, because they're like, well, these aren't religious movies. Axel Braun is this weird guy who makes all this hardcore porn, and he basically just does all these parodies of popular movies, like, this ain't a parody of this or that. I'm like, okay. So there's some weird people out there who just keep making stuff. Here's one John might know, Robert Shawinkt. He did the first Red and Divergent movies.
RIPD as well.
RIPD did Flight Plan with Jodie Foster. He's kind of just the go-to guy.
Flight Plan.
He just basically makes anything just out of his mind. He's just like, yeah, I'm just going to make a weird action thriller.
Yeah, like, he's definitely like action thriller oriented, and, you know, Flight Plan.
Love it. Yep. Totally. Jodie Foster on a plane. What else do you need?
Like, what else do you need? Jodie Foster on a plane.
Totally. What else did he work on? I know he did something else that was just like, yeah, that makes sense.
Are you talking still about Robert Schwenke?
Yeah, Schwenke. Okay, so yeah, he did Snake Eyes, John's favorite movie last year. Not.
Yeah, it was so great. Yeah, it was
so great. He's apparently just done this German film called The Captain. I remember it. It was pretty boring. But I love how he and there's this other guy, Michael Hallstrom, who you might know from Escape Plan, you know, with Arnie and Sly in prison, as well as unfortunately, I love Escape Plan, but as well as The Right with Anthony Hopkins as a priest.
Yes, yes.
So it seems like for a while, you see where he got his start. He was doing all these other unusual acclaimed German mystery movies and some horror movies as well. And it seems like now here he is in the States, and he's always just coming out with just something very unusual. And you're like, yeah, that kind of makes sense. It's deeper than the average B genre film, but at the same time, like, just describing his work is just unusual, because he never really makes the same movie every time.
Right.
That's true.
He did 1408.
There's something to be said for that, like that output, but just the sheer number, just being that prolific. Like I'm too much of a perfectionist, and it just seems like to make this many movies, you have to just be like, it is what it is. Like, do your best, put it together, put it out, and move to the next one, and just be able to, like, you know, whatever works.
The only time it doesn't make money is when I'm in jeopardy. He's done some other just weird movies that just kind of keep getting rediscovered, like 1408 with Sam Jackson, John Cusack, the Stephen King adaptation. He did Derailed.
Oh, yes, 1408, yeah.
Yeah, I liked that. That was a good one.
All right, so there you go. And then Derailed, which was a weird Clive Owen and Jennifer Aniston mystery movie. And it's like, I thought it was just a terrible screenplay.
Yeah, but agreed.
Very watchable. And so it's just like, everyone just keeps finding something new about it. And I remember when IMDb was a thing, people would just talk nonstop about that ending, that shocking ending. And it's like, you could tell which ones had not seen many movies and which ones just were impressed by anything twisted.
Just throw a twist. It doesn't matter if it makes sense. It doesn't matter. Like, you can track it within the story.
I got your money, suckers. Yeah. It's currently attached to a bunch of other sci-fi movies, but yeah, Outside the Wire was definitely a Netflix shit fest that I don't think anyone should have been involved with. But fortunately, he worked on Bloodline and an underrated movie I should recommend, Shanghai, which was another East meets West kind of formula. But yeah, no, I mean, there's still some guys coming out there. John, what's your take on Stephen Sommers, who did The Mummy, Mummy Returns, and Deep Rising?
I've always found him to be very underrated, especially the Deep Rising.
He, like, disappeared. He's like, what happened to him?
It seems like after Odd Thomas, he just vanished. I don't know what happened.
He kind of was on the way. I mean, if Tim Burton can keep making movies, if Fred Decker from Night of the Creeps can keep writing all these movies with Shane Black, his buddy, you know, it's like, where are all these other guys going?
He did a bunch of stuff for a while.
He did, yeah.
He did just completely disappear.
And I keep being told about the Pellini brothers, which are these other guys. One of them died, and just like, they just for the years were just like the unspoken of VHS guys who just make a weird slasher in their backyard. I take it you guys are also familiar with Godfrey Ho.
Yes.
So is he like the most confusing stock footage guy? The best of the confusing stock footage.
The best.
You know, this is like, that is his deal. He's not doing what all these other people do, which is just some weird, just claustrophobic thing. And I'll throw some other weird people out there.
Just check the back, see what footage is in there. Just put it in.
Yeah, you can make a whole movie just on back footage, you know?
You're right. I don't have to give it back. I gotta use it. David Wirth is another one. He does all these kickboxing movies. And it's like, after seeing War of the Lost World, I was just like, yeah, no. I can see why they called him worthless. And Tim Crane, he has all these movie plots, and he'll always just be known as, yeah, you're that dude who created Crossing Jordan Heroes. Yes, I am. Stephen C. Miller is kind of another guy who's coming out of nowhere. He remade Silent Night, Deadly Night 2, and then basically the rest of his career, he's just done all these home invasion or Race Against Time action thrillers.
It's like, yes. Awesome. Yeah. Those definitely had their heyday. They're still in there, I think.
Oh, totally. People
are loving that. I mean, with the, what is it? The certain, what's the one where they, The Purge? God, how many of those can they make?
Yeah. Right. Rob Cohen does all these Vin Diesel movies, and now he's making all these other bad movies. Paul W.S. Anderson will always be known as the guy who made Resident Evil. So it's like, yeah, this is like, everybody has a purpose somewhere or another. Thomas Decker, I'll throw out there. I already mentioned Kevin Tenney, Sybil Richards, John Quinn. All these other weird guys who's like, you've seen them, whether or not you know them, that's a whole different thing. That's true.
What's the director that like went on a whole route on cashing it? Well, I don't know if he really cashed in, but he has his own like genre of like parody style movies. Is it Aaron Stotzer? He makes like,
are you talking about like not like Scary Movie and teen
yeah, like
movie,
Scary like Movie and not another
yeah,
teen
they
movie.
Were working with the Zucker brothers own, and all those yeah, other guys Aaron, on Hot Shots. Yeah. And so yeah, it's like basically you couldn't tell them otherwise. They were going to make all this stuff. And it's like, plot? No plot. It just goes from one sketch to the next. You can tell they basically saw something like the Kentucky Fried movie.
But they have so many. Yeah, I mean, they have their ones. What was that?
I was thinking it's just like vignettes, like little like one yeah, plays
it,
that are all.
But they've created together. That genre and they've stuck with it because I like they had their big ones like Scary Movie and all that, but they have made so many. I mean, they've made like Spartan ripoffs and everything, and they just keep pumping out those like ridiculous.
Yeah, you're right. It's totally branched out to other
like
genres.
That. It's very specific humor, but they have a whole like. There were some I didn't even know, but they have a whole ton of them that they.
Oh yeah, out. And Craig Moss kind of got in on their action. He started making a bunch of just intentionally stupid like parody movies. Like Breaking Wind and 30 Nights of
Paranormal. Oh yeah, his are a little more. Yeah, I feel like yeah, his are a little more along that same line.
His maybe are pretty
raunchy,
crazy. But yeah, I mean, the dude has branched out into even doing Lifetime movies. That's how crazy he is. And then he does all these movies with Danny Trejo called Badass, where there's no plot. He's just gonna go around and just
kick everyone's ass. Yeah,
three of them. They are amazing. You must see them. And the fact that it was all inspired by a video.
Oh my gosh, Danny Glover's in one in the second.
Yeah,
one.
He's his veteran amazing. War buddy friend. Yeah, it's
watch those.
And virtually all these guys we've talked about pretty much appear in all these movies together. So yeah.
I mean, on some level, that sounds like the dream. Like you're pumping out stuff. You have a guaranteed audience. You have like this little group of friends, and you just get to spend your time, you know, doing what you want and hanging out with your friends.
Right? It seems kind of like it'd be so great. Yeah, I know.
So
you're
I making
ridiculous stuff, but you're having a great time doing it.
There must sees. So I will have, since we've got 4 minutes left on the clock. Right. I'll let any of these guys, who would you say everyone must, if just one, who they must check out every movie they've done, who would it be?
Oh, man. Oh, that's hard.
For better or worse. So I guess you guys will stick with the Troll 2 guy because you want to just keep finding all his lost movies.
Well, that's the thing. He's you know, obviously really well known in America for Troll 2, but he's got a lot of really good movies under his belt. So I will say that I have watched several of them and I love them. They're a good time. They're like, Troll 2 is awful, but it's such a good time. Like, The Room is like awful. You're not having a good time. Troll 2 is like, this is a pleasure to watch, but it's bizarre. And like, that's how his movies are. They're just, they don't make any sense, but they're fun to watch. And he loves them.
I think I'm going to go with James Wan, even though he hasn't made a ton, because I feel like I said earlier, he's got
I feel this, like he could improve if he actually had a budget versus making a...
Conceptually, he's really trying to do something interesting. Like, he conceptually has some good ideas. And I have fun trying to watch him execute those, even though it always falls a little bit flat. But you can tell that he loves what he's doing, and he's got this, like, childlike wonder, and it just seems like... yeah, watching him evolve, to say.
No, there you go.
We don't know how much he's actually evolving.
No, Ball is not. He is balls out bad. So while John tries to get Summers back in the ring, what should Summers do, John?
I don't know. Another creature film.
There you go. Perfect. Do another creature film. And yes, Yen should just like be... Maybe he should just do peaceful just commercials or music videos and then just start out slow again and then go big again.
Build his way up to his
back
next
it
video.
Up. And then start
if he
over.
Can do, he could, all these ads could be very interesting ads, regardless of whether they make sense. I would take them over any just endless, just really bad, you know, Geico knockoff.
For sure. And I tend to like, I don't really like I was saying earlier, the slasher movies so much, or like that's not my favorite genre, so I tend to like, I guess, maybe more of the cheese factor, so things that are trying to be dramatic or whatever and
yeah,
not really bad. And so I feel like he kind of falls into that
totally story. it's the best compromise of both worlds, mm-hmm. as opposed to we gotta just over commercialize all of this into where it's just like, well, now all we see is money, because it was better when right. you just, again, it was like William Shatner. Do you want the William Shatner when he wasn't in on the joke, or do you want Shatner now where he's just embarrassing himself? So
anyway, yeah. I want William Shatner either way.
And don't get me wrong, both are very entertaining, but you also is like, okay, so maybe just go with someone who's just like really seen better days and it's just painful. No makeup or competent filmmaker can hide like just how bad they are.
But I was going to say one thing like on that Troll 2 and one Mike style B movie is Charles Band movie. Band movies, they're always the best. Those are what people have to watch. Those are like self-aware, funny. We talked about it early, Ginger Dead Man. It's like those are some that everyone needs to check out because they're not like necessarily horror movies. They're just stupid, but they're so entertaining. And he's always one of my favorite, and I've seen all of them.
All of them.
We'll return after these messages.
Hey, feeling down? Feeling low? Not enough podcasts about movies in your life? Why not try?
They must be destroyed on sight!
The new podcast cure-all, sure to get you right with the world and on a path to better living. We have exploitation, we have Italian horror, we have zombies, we have slashers, we have crime films, we have spaghetti westerns, we even have sci-fi and sex comedies. So take a dose of...
They must be destroyed on sight!
As needed, and let the hosts, Lee Russell, Daniel Harper, Paul Romali, and the odd guest host cure what ails you.
Warning, may cause atrophy, African consumption, black fever, bone shave, chin puff, colic, cramp colic, dropsy of the brain, elephantitis, grocer's itch, jaundice, mania, miasma, mortification, palsy, Pott's disease, rheumatism, scurvy, St. Anthony's fire, summer complaint, and worm fit in some people. Consult a physician before listening.
Did you ever see a film at such a young age it left you traumatized with cinematic wounds?
Necrophilia.
It's a dead issue, man. Don't push it. Cinema Psyops is a weekly podcast documenting an ongoing experiment on the mind of an unwilling test subject.
No one should have to watch this movie.
Oh, no one should have to watch this?
No one should have to watch this movie.
Surprisingly, it's not a topic that a lot of people really want to tackle.
I'm shocked, prudes.
I know, really.
Right?
It's the next sexual frontier that no one wants to explore.
I am, in the most sincerest of senses, disappointed in you.
It takes a powerful goddess like Connie, jam her arm down the monster's throat and kill it. Oh, I'm still tripping out over that. Even as a kid, I was like, I gotta find a girl like that.
Every week, I get a new look of disappointment that I never thought I could get
it's
out of.
It's unimaginable. At 12 years old, you should not be watching this movie.
Obviously.
At 13, you should not be. 14, you shouldn't be. I'm not entirely sure even 17-year-olds should be watching this.
Just because you're offended by something doesn't mean that you have the right to demand that it doesn't exist.
Watching this film again, I had all of this like little nerd glee with everything that kept
little history
up.
Doll yeah, popping up
absolutely.
At you.
So I totally loved this film.
Hey, I know why you couldn't see that. It's because your brain's warped watching this shit at 12 years old.
Yeah, this is a rough movie. I told you ahead of time when we were getting ready to do it that it was.
How
be
did
a rough
you watch
one.
This shit at 12?
Because physical wounds heal, cinematic ones don't. Listen to Cinema Psyops.
Hey everybody, I'm Corey.
And I'm Zach, and we're the hosts of Podcasting After Dark, a cast dedicated to late-night horror and sci-fi of the 80s and 90s, often found on HBO and Cinemax.
You know, the movies your parents didn't want you watching as a kid. You can find us every other week on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, and Stitcher.
This is what you want.
This is what you get.
It's time, let's check our cue, baby. Pair it with a cup of brews, baby. We love good movies. We love the bad ones too. So we watch them all and pass their lessons on to you. Oh yeah.
Bana 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 bana.
Everything I learned from movies helps to make life a little bit groovy. With the one last plot holes, a gratuitous movie. It's time to get busy with your friend Steven Izzy.
At EILFM.podbean.com.
Welcome to Who Was She podcast. I am your host, Tara Jabari. After a decade working in documentaries, marketing, and all things digital media, I found that podcasting is a strong medium to share stories. After years of producing for others, I decided to start my own biographical podcast. Who Was She will focus on the life of a woman throughout Baha'i history. The first season is about Lydia Zemanoff. Lydia's story explores the subjects of the power of language and faith. Her father invented the universal language Esperanto, and she came from a Jewish family and became a Baha'i. She grew up during World War I and was killed during World War II in a concentration camp, despite heroic efforts to save her life. How can one person's life intersect with so many others, connect across borders, and inspire a biography, which inspired this podcast? Over the next few weeks, I will share her story with you and the lives that were most affected by her and those who affected her life as well. They include her father, Ludwig Semenov, her spiritual mother, American journalist Martha Root, and the Baha'i German soldier Fritz Mako, who worked for the resistance undercover while having to serve the Nazi party. I want to thank the author Wendy Heller and George Ronald Publishing for their blessing to let me use Heller's biography, Lydia, The Life of Lydia Zemanoff, Daughter of Esperanto, as a main and instrumental resource for this podcast. So please subscribe and learn about this amazing woman who traveled through three continents in an effort to bring unity through the power of language. You can also find more information on our Instagram, Facebook, and Pinterest at Who Was She Podcast. Music was composed and performed by Sam Redd. I am your host, Tara Jabari. Join us next time as we begin our journey about Lydia Zemanoff.
Are you sick of the same old stale podcasts? Well, then join Vanessa and Darren as they dissect movies of all kinds. The two lifelong cinema lovers bring their favorites, curiosities, and first-time watches to the operating table and inject them with a healthy dose of snark. Then there's the waiting room, where they examine books and short stories. So just look for them on Apple Podcasts and where fine podcasts are available. They're part of the Legion Podcast Network. Follow them on Twitter at VD Clinic Pod. Join them on Facebook at facebook.com/groups/VD Clinic Pod. Or email them at vdclinicpod@gmail.com. They're ready to cure what ails you. And still, they just might be a little contagious.
Hi there. It's Heather from the Watching Netflix Without You podcast. Did you know that there are over 1,200 Netflix original feature films and documentaries? And that number is only growing. So I've made it my mission to watch as many as I possibly can. Then, with a delightful guest or guests, disclaimer, more often than not my brother Ryan, we spend an episode rating, reviewing, and discussing a film at length. The first half of every episode is spoiler-free for those who haven't seen it yet, and in the second half, after a very clear spoiler warning, we dive into it. And that's really about it. You can listen to Watching Netflix Without You on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more.
We now continue with our program.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a Jacked Up.